This week, we're all going to be inspired by a young man, Dylan Nicholson. Dylan's 19 years old, running marathons and doing it for mental health and really involving himself in charity work. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me on today.
I'm keen to discuss why a 19-year-old would want to do that. Before we kick in, we met through some product. What's your favorite product of Body Science?
The vegan protein, the caramel one.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah, it's good. Whack it in with some oats after a run.
There's a marathon tip, guys. Get on board.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition. Today's podcast is brought to you by Whey Ultra, a 100% whey advanced performance protein designed for results. The ultimate in post-workout nutrition, Whey Ultra boasts a 4x whey protein matrix of peptides, isolates and concentrate, is loaded with BCAAs and EAAs, and is rapidly absorbed for maximum recovery and lean muscle growth. It's enhanced with prebiotics, probiotics and 5 digestive enzymes, plus is free from soy, gluten, added sugar, artificial flavors and sweeteners, and every batch is banned substance tested. Everything your body needs for recovery, nothing you don't.
Welcome to Body Science HQ. Today with me, a young man that is doing things that most of us wish we did every day, Dylan Nicholson. Now, mate, you're a champion. Like, I've watched your Insta for a while. I've been really keen to get you on board. You've done some podcasts with some of our friends and athletes around the place. You've really stuck your fingers in the mental health world. So, mate, why does a 19-year-old young male living on the Gold Coast want to work with mental health? Shouldn't you just be out fucking partying?
Yeah. Well, do you want to backtrack to
Let's
this?
Let's go. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So, right when I finished school in 2017, my whole focus was to be a professional water polo player. So I thought I had the next 10 years planned out, was going to go to the American system for 4 years and then go over and play Spain for like 6 years or so.
As a professional?
Yep. And just live the lifestyle and saw it through social media, had all these people that I was following. And, you know, they look like they were living their lives. So essentially after school, I did a few odd jobs to basically pay to get over there. So I started off with landscaping, did that for about 5 weeks and then slipped a disc in my back.
Yeah, nice.
Yep. So that was the end of that. So I was pretty glad that I wouldn't be ever doing landscaping again in my life. Tried it. Yeah, that was an interesting one. And then my next job was telemarketing, which was all about character building, basically.
A bit of resilience brought along there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
A lot of people wouldn't know what telemarketing is. Like, you're doing, what,
120 calls a day.
A day, yeah. You know,
so and that's, I'd all be about, like, trying to beat everyone. So yeah. It's, like, that competitive nature. So I'd sort of bring my, like, sporting aspect into that, like, sort of telemarketing sphere. I'd always be trying to have the most amount of, like, calls and everything like that. So lasted about, I think it was about 6 to 8 weeks there. And I just...
Were you selling something exciting?
I was selling Google AdWords.
That would have been a tough gig. Yeah. Who were you ringing, companies or just people?
I was ringing businesses. Yeah. So I was ringing your everyday tradie. I was ringing, you know, electrical companies.
Everyday tradie. So give us some of the feedback you got.
Yeah. So I actually got lectured by one guy. He told me, like, he asked me how old I was and I told him I was 18 at the time. And he's just like, man, what are you doing? Like, you're doing telemarketing. You know, you're probably one of the most hated people. And like, naturally, it just didn't sound good. And I actually, most people would just hang up the phone, but I actually listened to him. I was like, you know what? I have 120 calls a day and I'm just going to listen to this guy.
Yeah.
So I listened to him. He actually gave me some good advice on doing what you love. And I think that's one thing that's really stuck with me. Hence pursuing this water polo dream when everyone told me that I couldn't do it. So
But you actually got in the college system in the US, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. So I literally picked up water polo in year 10 and started playing it competitively in year 11. And most kids, I'd have to drive up to Brisbane. So mm-hmm. I'd play up in Brisbane, would catch the train up because parents couldn't drive me. And that was like, I look back on that and I'm like, wow, I was like extremely motivated, extremely driven. But only in the sporting sphere. Like in the schooling system, I was probably, you know, I was an average student. I wasn't anything amazing. I thought I was amazing. I'd come out of every test thinking I got an A, but I'd end up with a D. I think it was maybe my optimistic got the best of me in some stages, but.
The schooling system doesn't always bring out the best in people. There's some people that do really well, and like there's some people that just excel when they leave it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and that's the thing, like you just never know. So, and then after the telemarketing role, I essentially tried to run my own little Facebook ads business.
Oh, did you?
Yep. So I bought a course online for $1,500. It was called...
And you're 18 at this stage, you're still 18?
Yeah, I'm still 18. Yeah. It was Dan Henry, shout out to Dan Henry. Bought his course, studied it for about 20 days and then pitched it to a lot of PTs on the Gold Coast.
Yep.
And I actually had one guy come on board, did a 2-week trial with him and it didn't go that well. Essentially like got him a couple leads, but he said, oh, I don't want you. And I think he gave me like $200 for the trial, which was fair enough. But essentially I tried to do it when I was over in America. So this was like probably getting towards the June, July, and then went over to America and thought I could do it over there.
So you've gone to America to Golden West College?
Yep, Golden West College.
To play water polo?
Yep.
Yep, and you're trying to run a business in Australia from there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was all...
Did you do much planning before you started or you just jump straight in?
I jumped straight in. Yeah. I'm like one of those
guys. I knew the answer to that. I just thought to ask it.
Yeah. So I went over there and tried to call up American businesses while I was over there in Huntington Beach saying, do you need help with Facebook ads? Like I'd research which websites that have a Facebook pixel. And if they didn't have a Facebook pixel, I knew like...
Straight on the phone.
Yeah, I could be like, oh, I can help you out. Put a Facebook pixel on you guys for free and then hopefully I can get some business from you guys. And then it all went to shit because they thought I was like a telemarketer just because of my accent and everything like that. So that throughout that, I put that in the bin. I just said, no, I just got to focus on my water polo because we were training 11 times a week over there.
Okay, wow.
So it consumed our whole lives. We'd train 4.5 hours a day and then be eating probably like, at least 1 kilo or 2 kilos of food, like ridiculous amounts. Like we weren't counting calories or anything, but just eating because we were hungry.
Yeah, and energy expenditure would be through the roof.
Yeah. So we were doing that like first 2 weeks were called Hell Week and it was essentially you're at the pool like 4 to 5 hours every day and that's all you did. And so we're getting like 8 to 10 hours of sleep. Like, yeah, I didn't have much time to do anything else. I was like, I got to focus all on this. And it got to the stage where it was actually the third session and I was so excited and I was going home to cook our meal. I actually became the cook of the house somehow. It was my little escape, weirdly. So essentially I was cooking and I was watching a knife and I actually split my finger open. So yeah, there's a cut right there. You can see it.
Okay.
Yeah. And ended up getting 6 stitches and that basically ruled me out for about 2-3 weeks. And that was like a bit of a heartbreak. No, the next day I actually suffered. I don't know if I can talk about it, but I was doing drugs at the time. I was doing weed.
No weed in California, mate.
Yeah, I know. It's everywhere there. And I was doing, and I had like my first like major trip and all these rush of everything just went through my brain. Like everyone saying no, like why'd you go over there? And I felt very like vulnerable and insecure in that stage. And that was probably the biggest realization when I was just like, oh, you know, this might be over and there's nothing I can do about it because I'm over there. And my parents didn't really want me to go over there and I sort of had to self-fund it. But then once my parents, I spoke to them about it, I told them like, I can't make any money over here. Can you help me out? And they helped me out. And that was a big stress relief off me because then I could just focus fully on water polo. So, you know, after that little trip, 3 weeks in, was back to, you know, normal me. And then essentially I was just training day after day, not getting much positive feedback. And I'm a person who loves positive feedback. Yep. Like I need some like feedback as to whether I'm going right or I'm going wrong. I never liked to be the teacher's pet. So I literally, it took me a lot, but I needed to go to the coach and like ask him, you know, because I wasn't getting any game time. That was the whole issue.
Yep.
So I went over there thinking I was going to be, you know, a star or something. Essentially, I was on the bench the whole time. So I actually, in the grand final, we won the championship for the whole year. And I didn't play in that whole game. I didn't play the whole game.
Not even a minute.
Not even a minute. And like, that is probably the most heartbreaking moment when I was just like, I think this dream's over, you know? Like, I was like, well, I think I've been a bit delirious in some stages. My optimism has got the best of me and I need to reevaluate my situation. And yeah.
Did your party lifestyle you had for a while when you cut your finger, obviously when you go off, you're not training 11 times a
week. Oh, I was still training.
Anymore. You still were training
with
your finger?
Yeah, I was still training. Okay. So I actually had a cast on and I'd wrap it around in a plastic bag and I'd just be doing egg beater. So like just all legs.
Yeah.
I'd be on the bike. I'd still be training when they were training because the coach is always like, oh, you got to show up, you know, show up every day. But yeah, the weed grew bigger on me. So I was never much into drugs. Coming from Australia, I'd probably only ever tried it once or twice at a house party. And then over there, I was probably doing it every day. Like I got trapped in it. And just because...
just doesn't sit well with some people, mate.
Nah, that's it. And my teammate, who was the best player in our team, he would smoke it probably like 5 times a day. He'd hit it before training, in between training, after training, and then like for recreational in the afternoon, he'd hit what you call a dab, which is like 99% THC. And then to go to sleep, he'd have one. So it was just like you're in a house where you're supposed to be like an athlete, but really you're just a druggie. And it was just like complete shock to the system.
Obviously no drug testing going down in that campus and that system over there.
No drug testing at all. But
because you don't drink alcohol either, do you?
No, so I've been 6 months sober now. When we're over there, we're living for the weekend. So we'd be training our asses off and living for the Saturday night house parties in America.
Yep.
Which was, you know, it was fun.
Epic.
But it was definitely took a toll, you know. Mm. I think everyone through social media, I put up a front that I was living my best life, but really I was dying on the inside and not a lot of people would see that, you know. So, and it's not something you really want to talk about. So
mate, let's touch on that. You're like, you're 19 and you say you're dying on the inside.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I'm 50. I got a different theory. What's a 19-year-old dying on the inside mean?
Well, for me, it was like, I thought I had the next 10 years of my life planned out and it all went to shit, essentially. So not having a clear and bright future, that's something I've always like had. I've always, you know, always been that person to, you know, have a goal maybe 5 years down the line and then know what to do to get there. And just having that lost over there, and I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't go back home because, you know, everyone thought I was living this dream life. Yeah. And I couldn't tell anyone in my water polo house because...
they're all stoned anyway, weren't they?
Yeah, and that was full of alpha males. Yeah. You know? Like, if you...
it is a tough thing for men to talk about when you're hitting the dark spots in life. It is tough, isn't it?
Because we're in a house full of alphas. And if you tell, like, you know, if there's any group of males, they'll team up on you. So you can't show any weakness. And it got to the stage where I realized I wasn't going to be over there much longer. So I actually, one of the rawest moments for me was when I went to the sports psychologist. And basically, he was the only person I could really speak to. I spoke to him and I essentially broke down. I just started crying. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, this is just taking a toll on me. And he gave me enough hope to last out the last month I was over there. And yeah, that was probably one of the rawest moments and biggest change makers for me.
And was that a university funded sports psychologist or was that somebody you went to outside?
No, he was in-house. So
his job was to keep you motivated on sport in the university or was it about you?
It was almost, he was there for external. So like you had a choice to go to and I like would just take the opportunity up because I couldn't really speak to anyone else, couldn't speak to any mates or such. And he was almost like that person that you could really just open up to. And he had a psychologist background, but he was just another teacher really. So what he was doing was just community service in a way. He wasn't getting paid to do what he did. He was just offering external time.
That's great, which
was amazing.
And mate, do you think that anyone out there listening who is suffering that same thing that you went through should reach out to someone qualified like a sports psychologist or a psychologist? Like, did you think that was a great step for you to take?
Definitely. It was the best thing I've ever done because if I didn't have him, I would have probably would have still been in America, to be honest. I would have just tried to push through it and then eventually done something really stupid.
Mm.
Don't know what it would have been, but scary to think.
And mate, is this why you've gone down the path of doing a lot of charity work and tribe-related group? Like you've started some groups together of like-minded people that want to help industry and non-industry fitness people.
Yep.
Like was that your starting thing? Because your Instagram account is about positivity and gratitude. And was that the moment when you said, I can help others?
Yeah, well, so the moment for me was when I came back to Australia and I got into drinking a lot. So I was going out 3-4 times a week, hitting up bedroom, you know, the local places.
Yep.
And one of my best mates, his dad owns like the nightclubs up there. So we'd get free drinks, treated like royalty. And at the time, it was a lot of fun, but look back on it now and it's a bit of a curse, you know? So the turning point for me was when I got kicked out of the nightclub, when I stopped thinking I was invincible, you know?
Assisted or just kicked out?
Oh, I got kicked out by a security guard. Yep. I tried to run away, go the other way, but yep. he grabbed me and booted me out. I was.
So that was your second big reminder about what you're doing in life?
Yeah. Yeah. I was essentially unconscious in the nightclub, like just so punch drunk. Yeah. Like it was shocking. And then I reached out to this figure called Gavin Topp, and he got me into network marketing, which is very frowned upon in society. One thing I've learned, it taught me so much. It taught me personal development and like figuring out what your why is and all that kind of stuff. And through that, met a bloke called Jeff, and Jeff got me into running, and I was just like, I'm gonna run a marathon. So I essentially started running with this guy, and about 10 weeks into the journey, one of my best mates suffered from depression. I hadn't heard from him in about 2 days, and we usually hanged out every day because at this time I didn't have a job. I was just surfing. I was just lazy. I was living the dream, essentially.
Finding yourself.
I was planning on going to Bali, telling parents I was going to find myself over there, but probably would have found someone else anyway. Yeah, so one of my best mates, he suffered from it, and I basically reached out to his mum because it had been 2 days. He wasn't replying to any of my texts. I was getting a little bit worried. Had no clue what was happening, and his mom replied to me and said, oh, I'll go check on him. And then as she checks on him, he sends me this huge long ass message that he's been bedridden for 2 days and he's been suffering from depression.
So he actually told you that?
Yeah, he actually told me that. So,
well, that's a good step.
Yep, that was the first step. And that was the biggest shock of my life because I never really known what to do in that situation. So,
I don't think many people do know what to do. What did you do? Like, what was your journey there?
So I essentially just asked my parents, like, what should I do? And they just said, look after him. So the next morning we went for a run and just got some physical movement into him. So we went for like a 5K run, and then we went for a little beach swim, and then took him back to mine and basically fed him. Like, he hadn't eaten for 2 days, got some food into him, and just hung out with him for about 2 days straight just to make sure he was, like, you know, good, and he wasn't, you know, going to go back to his bed, and he was eating and just doing physical activity. So
that's gave him a purpose.
Yeah, essentially that. And then got into doing this charity. So that's the whole reason why I started raising funds for mental health, and then essentially raised about $300, and it was 10 weeks to go to the marathon. And I was like, I got to think of something creative to...
Because you set a target of like $5,000 or something.
Yeah, five grand.
So this is for the Black Dog Institute too, wasn't it? Yeah,
so
great cause.
I'm a person who always shoots for the stars.
Yep.
So I looked on the little banner of how much you can raise, and the biggest number at the time was 5,000. So I was like, oh, click on
that's
that.
That's me, yep.
Yeah. Anyway, get to the 10-week stage, and I was like, I got to think of something creative. So I think I was at my mate's sister's 21st. I was the only one who was sober there. This was when I was being sober. I still am. And
oh, it's just funny watching a young 9-year-old good-looking kid say I'm sober, and it's just like it's you're an incredible human. Like, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, mate.
No, that's all right. Yeah. And one of my mates was like, I was telling him like this goal of mine, and I wanted to run the marathon and raise some money, and he was just like, oh, mate, I reckon it'd be funny as if you did it in your budgies. And I was just like, you know what, why not? So this is another funny story. I actually won this little free modeling shoot.
Yeah.
And I don't consider myself a model. And like, I didn't use any of the photos from the shoot, but I asked the guy at the end, oh, mate, do you reckon you could just film a little 20-second video of me saying that I'm going to run this marathon in my budgies?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, sure thing. And so I used that video and put that on Facebook, shared to the Gold Coast Bulletin, and it like kind of went viral. So the next day I was in the Gold Coast Bulletin, and then I was going for my, I think it was like my third half marathon run, and I'm getting all these message requests on Facebook, and I was like, what is happening here? And it's all these radio stations wanting to have me on and hear this story of me running in my budgies in the marathon. And I was just like, what is happening here? And this was at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was just saying yes, 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 like I'll come on and go on all these radio stations like 90.9, 102.9, like all the major ones, and then go on Channel 9 News during the middle of the day. And then within that week of all this blowing up on social media, I raised $2,500.
Yeah, nice.
So like, you know, people like, oh, he's delirious, like why is he you know, one of those youthful people running around thinking that they can do everything. And there was a few, you know, negative comments, but a lot of it was positive, and it gained traction and ended up, you know, raising like $6,000. So
yeah, nice work, clap that in.
Yeah, so and here I am today.
So mate, you're a young guy, and you've put yourself out and you've taken some great risks. You're going, how was, like, let's just talk about the anxiety of being a young kid getting asked to do radio interviews, and obviously you had no media training. And how were you rocking up to a radio station? Were you rocking up in your budgies or did you?
So it was actually funny. So I didn't rock up to the radio stations. They just had me on call.
Okay. Yeah.
So I was just speaking on my phone. And one thing is I've always been very nervous in public speaking spheres. So I find physical activity, once I do physical activity, I get this rush of endorphins where I feel like I'm invincible. So what I did was is I ran a half marathon before I did this interview and then essentially was just on a bit of a running high and it was like my little natural drug, and did these interviews and
killed it.
Yeah, didn't feel nervous. Just, and I was, another thing was I was walking. Like, I'm a person who likes to be walking,
moving while you did the interviews.
Yeah, because if that's when I get my like free flowing thoughts coming in. Otherwise, if I'm pretty stagnant like this right now, I'm feeling pretty comfortable, but like if I was probably on Channel 7 News or something, I'd be freaking out, like going bright red, just, yeah. But for some reason, that worked for me. So I think it's just about finding what works for you and trying to accommodate to that.
So everybody wants to know the secret to public speaking. You've got to run a half marathon before you start. There you go. You heard it here first. So, mate, what's working with you? You've hooked up with the 440 guys, with Toddy. Yeah. You've hooked up with a lot of people that I know in the industry. You've created a group for young men. Is that correct?
Yeah.
In where I'm,
yeah. So that's it's Mindpack.
Yeah.
So funny story. I went down to Sydney. It would have been about 5 weeks ago, and I messaged. It was actually for a casting role, and I, at this stage, I was all about like doing things that are outside my comfort zone, and I really just was like, you know what, I'm just going to try for this like TV presenter role, I think it was. And I didn't get it, but I went down there.
That's gold.
I was like, oh, I'll give it a crack. And went down to Sydney and I messaged Toddy the night before. I was like, oh, mate, do you want to jump on the podcast?
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, sure thing. Let's do it. And then so I, after the interview, I meet up with them and we go do this podcast. And then it's all about the 440. And then they tell me that there's one on the Gold Coast and I didn't even know about it. And we basically, you know, did the podcast. And another funny story, I missed the flight home, so I had to get another flight. And Mum wasn't too happy about that, but it's another story. And essentially, I met Matty Palmer. So Matty Palmer runs the Gold Coast one. And he sort of had a similar vision. He wanted to help out people in the mental health realm. He's always been into physical movement and he's been in the athlete scene. So we wanted to create a space where athletes could talk about some of their rawest moments. So,
because you had Ali Day there and a few big hitters, didn't you?
Yeah. So we had a good turnout. We were hoping to get 12 to 15 people, but we ended up getting 24 out of 25 capacity.
Yeah.
So he had the network. So the one thing that we work well with is I'm still trying to grow my network, but he's got that network and I've got that social media. So we would work, you know, hand in hand in that aspect. Yeah. So I'd look after the social media and he'd look after, you know, getting people to the event and getting speakers in. So we got Maxi Kennedy, which is an ex-AFL player for the Lions, and he got Nick Buck, which is he's a cricketer for Brisbane Heat, and then he got another bloke who was just an everyday Joe. And we heard three stories that were some of their rawest moments that you wouldn't necessarily hear in a normal conversation. And one of the blokes, Nick Buck, really opened up. He spoke about one of the stages where he almost, you know, took his own life, which was quite real and very powerful. And our whole goal with this Mindpack group is to not educate such, but more so just have a casual conversation about it in an informal way, because that's us as blokes. We're informal humans who don't like to see, you know, PowerPoint presentations, because we know they're not speaking with passion. You know, they're not speaking from the heart. They're just speaking from words on the PowerPoint screen that they did probably 2 days ago, you know, or they've been studying their whole life, but they actually haven't experienced it. So we're all about experiences, and that's the best way I found that learn and creating a whole group of people that, you know, if I was a young athlete, you know, at 17, I would want to be hearing stories from people that I look up to, some of their rawest moments. So it was really special. We actually had a young kid and his dad there, which was very cool. Now we we're just, the sky's the limit with that kind of mind pack.
And mate, how do people get into mind pack if they're interested in reaching out?
So they just follow the social media on Instagram and Facebook.
And what's that?
It's just mind pack.
One word?
Yeah, mind pack.
So. Nice. Yeah. Is that a play on six pack by any chance?
Yeah, it actually is. So our whole little, not mission statement, but saying around it is that we believe the health and fitness industry focuses on six pack abs, but we focus on a six pack mind. So.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That's probably called a vision.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
There we go.
So, mate, tell us about, you've obviously geared up, your mate's been sick, you've got a process, you've gone to the Black Dog Institute, you've picked, why did you pick Black Dog Institute?
Yeah, so essentially I'm a big person who I'll just speak to people and ask for advice from them. So I just spoke to this one brand and they said Black Dog's a very reputable company.
Yep.
They've been doing great work in the mental health industry. So I just chose them. And yeah, that's basically how it all happened.
How it all happened, hey?
Yeah.
And so you started running because you felt good running, and you took your mate through that process when he went through the same. To go from a 5K run to a marathon's a big step. Who did you reach out to and who helped you run a marathon? You just can't put shoes on and run a marathon. You got to have a bit of a process and a journey. Yeah.
Well, it all started for me when I did this. I ran 5Ks for a whole month. So I ran 5Ks every day for a month straight. And that basically, I think, gave me the fitness to sort of cover the distances. And then there's this one guy called Jeff who basically would train twice a week. So every Monday, we'd get up at a ridiculous time, usually 3:30, 4 a.m.
Wow.
And run a half marathon. And I'd have a few mates message.
So you went from 5K to 21 just straight up?
No. So I did a 14K.
Yeah.
That was probably the biggest stepping stone.
Yeah.
And then realizing that I could run 14 kilometers, I was like, holy, I can actually do that. And then 3 weeks after that, I did a half marathon. And when I did that half marathon, it was I hit the 15 kilometer mark and it was an experience I've never really experienced before. It was where you felt like giving up, but you pushed through it and it was you were in autopilot mode. So from 16 kilometers to 21 kilometers, that's when I was just all autopilot. Pilot and just somehow just doing it. And that was the turning point for me, realizing that running is all mental. It's a mental game. And if you can just push past, a couple barriers, then you can, I've got goals to run 500 kilometers.
I introduce you to Kieran Douglas. You met Kieran?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a weapon, isn't he?
He's an animal.
Yeah.
Actually, that's another funny thing is the things that have come from running. I don't consider myself a runner. I actually want to do a whole range of sports just to prove to people that you can do anything. It's just your mind telling you that you can't do it. I actually met Kieran at an ASICS event. I got invited to an ASICS event.
Did you? Yeah. And he's an ambassador.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. I was just I would come probably, 50th in cross countries at school and now I'm getting invited to ASICS events.
Isn't it unreal? Community, once you give to a community and you're part of it and you're legitimate, it just doesn't stop. You wait and see in the next 5 years, your journey is going to be something incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because it's a hard thing to see that. People will tell you, we'll look for the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be amazing. But it's almost, every day is a struggle. I think one thing I've learned and a lot of young people struggle to realize is patience is everything. Realizing that there's a longer picture and that you are so young and you can trial everything and you can fail at everything, but as long as you keep trying, that's the main thing. I don't understand how people can go from school and thinking that they can decide their future by four or five options on a QCS test. I failed my QCS test and there's people out, I actually told everyone that I passed it, but I actually failed it. I can honestly tell you, I think there's more people out there that failed it, but just don't want to openly share about it. And I think we're all different learners,
Exactly.
I'm hands-on, visual. I love doing things. I hate reading.
Yeah.
And I think it's just playing to your strengths.
I'm the same. I'm a visual person too, man. Yeah. I totally get where you come from. And I definitely didn't cut the mustard as the best student at school. I'll give you a little heads up. And my arts degree, which I finished in about 10 years, I think I got one of the records at Griffith Uni for that too, just quietly. So, yeah, it was a struggle for me. I more prefer to think and act.
Yeah.
That's, I can see things and I have no fear of starting something. And, if you fail, you learn from it, move on and make it work next time.
It's 100%. I think that's the biggest thing I've learned is that.
You don't get that from the schooling system.
No, you've just got to try. I got like we were saying before, I've got mates who are way better videographers, photographers than me, but they don't believe in themselves enough to, you know, create some content for people, and they're all about perfection. And perfection is like, I think it's a curse.
You know, the thing about perfection, you never get there.
Nah. Like, you're always waiting for that new camera, that new lens to make it better, but it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I know one of my closest mates, he could so be a full-time videographer, photographer, but just is always waiting for perfection. He's going
to
be waiting.
Mate, you do a bit of that videography, and you obviously need to get some work because you're doing too much charity work. Mum and dad will be telling you to get a real job.
Tell me about
being a parent, I've said that once or twice too, and not really meant it. Walked away going, why the fuck did I say that? But you know, you got to stand by what you say.
Yeah.
Mate, how do people get onto you if they want to get some content done?
Oh, they just...
That's probably your first problem.
Yeah.
That should have been the first answers. Oh, you go here.
No, so yeah, you can message me through Instagram, Dylan Nicholson Journey, Facebook.
I might slow that down a little bit. It's Dylan.Nicholson.Journey. We left out the Z and the X. We only got all 26 letters. So yeah, so if somebody wants something, jump on your Insta and they can DM you.
Yeah.
I love this new age business. Do you have an email?
Yeah.
Nah, that's so old. I don't do email either. I can't really say that.
Yeah. Well, they can email me. It's like dylannicholson341@gmail.com, but whatever.
That makes sense.
Yeah, whatever floats their boat.
I love youth. I just love the fact that you're this young and you're an entrepreneur. I mean, you haven't found what you want to be an entrepreneur in yet, but you're doing so many cool things out there. And I just love the fact that, you know, a business plan is something we can do. It's not something we need to, like your mate constantly is looking at his business plan. Oh, I need a new camera. I need this or I need that. I need that. You've just got out and you do things. I mean, at 19 years and 2 years out of school, you've been to America, had a drug addiction, had a mental breakdown, helped to make it through a mental breakdown, done a marathon, done a few videos on the way to keep mum and dad at bay on the real job scenario, and made some good decisions not to go to Bali when you shouldn't have. I think that's one of the biggest decisions you made, that I was nodding as you were saying that, going, that would have been so fucked up if you went there. I love that place, hey.
Yeah, it's a good place.
So what do you got? What do you got for the young kids out there that don't know who they are or what they are? Would one of the things you say is do something for someone else first?
Yeah, I think one thing for me is the biggest realization, I was always chasing money. So in business, my first business where I started when I was 16 was selling.
16, I missed that one, sorry.
Yeah. I was selling wave rings. So I got them from.
What's a wave ring?
So it's a
ring with a wave picture on it. Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah.
So got those from Alibaba, trusty Alibaba, and bought 200 of them
in
old stock. Yeah. This was when influencer marketing really started to kick off. So it would have been 3 years ago now. I grew this social media account to about 20,000 followers, and I was like, I'm going to release a product. So everyone was doing t-shirts at the time. I was like, I'll do wave rings. Did wave rings and sold about, I think it was 150 of them. And I thought I was like some entrepreneur genius, you know, like at 16.
You should do 150 out of 200 straight up. That's good with no business plan.
And I was like, it was funny because I had a weird method to my genius. I'd like go to house parties and I'd always bring a spare ring and I'd get super drunk and just give it to like the best looking girl at the night. And then hopefully post a picture of it.
I'll tell you, say $15 postage in an initial message.
Exactly.
It's pretty clever, really.
Exactly. And then I'd also just message, you know, influencers on the Gold Coast, which there is an abundance of, essentially say, you know, can you post a picture? And they'd say, oh, I charge this rate. And I'll be like, oh, you know, I'm 16. I'm starting out. Like, would you be willing to help me out? And then most of the time they'd say yes and the picture
done. If you don't ask, you don't get it, do you?
Yeah, exactly. And then that was when like growth was insane on Instagram and it was really working well. And then, people would ask me like, oh, where do you see the business going? I was like, I don't know. I was just enjoying it, really. But long story short, I was always chasing money. And the biggest realization for me was when I stopped chasing money was it's actually a byproduct of the service or energy that you put out, whatever it may be. So, for example, when I started up this page, Dylan Nicholson Journey, which was...
Dot in the middle.
Yeah, dot. It's a mouthful. When I started that up 5 months ago, I started getting a few messages from people my age saying, you know, I'm inspiring them. And I was just like, that's a bit weird. Like, I've just come back from being on a drug addiction, you know, alcohol abuse, everything, you know, and I'm inspiring these people to go a bit sober, you know, like that you actually can have a social interaction with people at 19 and not be drunk, or you can meet a girl and not be drunk, or meeting them on Tinder or Bumble or whatever. You can actually
never heard of them.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole range of them and there's definitely abundance. and just, you know, be sober. So I got some really like heartfelt messages giving these people hope that I've never met before. And that was a realization where the effect that you have on others is worth more than any paycheck.
Yeah,
and
nice.
That has stuck with me the past 6 months. And
it's that purpose word, isn't it? Yeah. It's a purpose. Like that's a reason to get out of bed.
Oh, 100%. So yeah. I would literally like get a message a day back, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, and that would make me show up so much on social media. And I never thought I'd be this confident on social media. Like I was a very insecure person, always have been. But the biggest shift for me was when I realized instead of always focusing on what others are thinking or the negatives, create this imaginary person. So for example, I created a person who listed the characteristics that I wanted, which was positive, optimistic, outgoing, sporty, and is looking for something new. So I just list that and speak directly to that person through social media. So I wouldn't care if there would be, you know, 1,000 people looking at this, but if I can reach 1 or 2 people, that is worth more than anything. Like that 998 other people who are talking shit, that yep. doesn't mean anything to me. The 2 kind messages or the 2 messages that I've had an effect on these people is worth more than anything. And that's the biggest shift. And that's why I show up so much on social media.
I'm going to introduce you to a doctor named Dr. Craig Duncan. He was a HIM performance at the Socceroos for years.
Yeah.
He's really emphasized like self-science.
Yeah.
One of the things that he talks about is your deathbed scorecard. So you're on your deathbed.
Yeah.
And you with your wife, your kids, whatever. And you know the stuff you say to them, oh, I wish I did this. I wish I did that. I wish you've done that. You're 19 years old and you've just done that. Oh, I wish I was this, and this. You called it a false person, but it's like a deathbed scorecard. He does all the work with Benny Seymour, who met on the Red Bull Defiance. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll hook you up with him and have a chat because I think you two could do a lot of good things together. He's got a lot of research, published research behind what he's achieved in life. And what would Dr. Craig be? Geez, I could be making a mistake here. I'd say he'd be in his 50 plus. So great guy, you know, does a lot at university level too, but just a really good human. Next time he comes up, I'm going to hook you guys up for lunch. And
epic.
Yeah, I think you'd get a lot out. Like a person like that will give you some really cool direction on where you're going and probably explain why you do a lot of things you do, which is cool because once you know why you do it, you can share it and teach others.
Oh, self-awareness is the biggest thing I've learned.
Yeah, you know? It's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. Like I thought I had a close group of 12 friends and I've realized I've only got 2 close mates and I trust them with my life.
Yeah.
But those 2 mates, like there's a lot of people. I was always chasing friends. I wanted to be a people pleaser. And once I stopped like doing things to please others and doing it to, you know, better myself, as selfish as that sounds, it's going to help more people. And I think that's a big shift and a lot of people suffer from it.
Oh, mate, that's let's talk the word anxiety. That's the number one reason for this high-level anxiety a lot of people have got. Let's talk about something positive. You just did Red Bull Defiance.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you, why did you want to do that?
Funny. Okay, this is actually a really good story. So I saw it pop up on my Facebook feed. And I'm a person who never likes to say no. I'm a bit of a yes person.
There's a movie about that, isn't there?
Yeah. It's a bit of a funny thing. And I was like, this is me. This is me. This is what I want to do. I'm all about seeking discomfort, challenging my mental state. So I use sport as a way to push the boundaries of my mind and what our body's actually capable of. Because I think like I have a dream of like doing something pioneering in whatever it may be. Like a guy I look up to is Ross Edgley, who swam around the whole of Great Britain. I want to do something like that, except I don't know, whatever it may be, but just something that's never been done before. But yeah, and then started this. I saw it on Facebook and I was like, I'm going to do it. Didn't have any money at the time. I was broke. And I think I actually owed my sister $100. That's how.
That doesn't count.
Yeah.
No, don't worry about that.
Yeah. And then essentially was like, I'm going to do it. I committed to it and said, I'm going to do it. And I reached out to Toddy and Trent because none of my 19-year-old mates want to do a 150-kilometer event. So I
wonder why.
Yeah, I don't know. Go figure.
I anyway, don't even get off the couch since you can Uber Eats these days, don't you?
That's it, mate. And asked Toddy and Trent, oh, do you know any blokes that'd be keen to do it? And they basically got me in contact with this one guy called Nick Harris who was keen to do it. He lives in Sydney. And we just kept in contact. We're like, yep, let's do it. And I still had no clue how I was going to fund this trip. Essentially, I did a podcast with a guy 6 weeks before this and he he called me up, literally, no joke, no word of a lie, a week after I committed to it, saying that he needed to do a, he wants me to do a film job for him. And this film job would pay the whole trip.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So my little story behind it is that when you commit to something, it's going to naturally happen.
Everything will align.
Yeah, everything will align. As scary as it may be, as much as your parents may yell at you, it will happen.
That's mum and dad's job, so, mate. They've got to do that. They've got to be the break.
That's it. So, yeah, and then committed to it. I actually thought I was going to do it in my Budgie Smugglers. And
you didn't?
No, I didn't, because I realized that my butt would be absolutely destroyed and I needed a bike kit sort of thing. So a good mate of mine, Matty Palmer from Mindpack, he hooked me up with one of those Lycra suits that they wear that's got the bum cushioning for the big...
It's got a chamois in it.
Yeah, for the big 53-kilometer bike. Yeah, so I rocked up to North Queensland on... It was last Friday. Met everyone and started off Saturday morning at 4:50. I actually woke up at 4 o'clock, ate some food, and then we jumped on the buses for an hour drive to where we started rafting. Oh, actually, before that, on the Friday, we did like a little seating thing, 2-kilometer kayak.
Yep.
Our rudder was spinning around in circles.
And well, that makes it tough.
Yeah, it made it tough. So we ended up like placing pretty bad. But yeah, and then we did that, essentially put you in what raft you'd be in. So we were in raft, I think it was like 9 or 10 out of 13. So towards the back. And we're with Scotty Henderson. Do you know Scotty Henderson?
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows Scotty, yeah.
Yeah, we're with him. His mate, who's a drummer for some big rock band. I forgot what it's called. Yeah, Parkway Drive.
Oh, okay.
Parkway
nice.
Drive. Yeah. I actually didn't know this, but he's a big shot, like professional drummer. And I thought he was just an everyday Joe just from Byron
Bay. Is that the everyday Joe you were talking about earlier?
No. But I just thought he was just some Byron Bay bloke, but he's from Park Rock band or whatever it is. And he's like full professional drummer. No joke. We're going down the kayak and we were losing spots. Like, we ended up finishing last in the rafting, which you thought you couldn't lose spots in because it was like one after one after one. But yeah, we ended up finishing that last.
Did you come out or did you stay in?
No, I stayed in. So I was very happy with that. But my rafting abilities weren't very good. So,
well, it's not something you get up and train for every day, is it?
No, so I was copping a bit from the boys because I was the youngest, but it was all right. And then we did a ab sail down this just cliff thing, which was pretty cool, into the water. And then we got in and did the 23-kilometer trail run, which was basically the turning point because for the first 5 kilometers, I was struggling to keep up with my partner, Nick. But then after that, he busted one of his calf muscles.
Ah.
So it was basically struggle street for both of us. And he couldn't go up hills. So he'd start like just cramping up real bad. So I'd have to push him up the hills and then we'd run down together. But most of the hills, I'd just have to push him up. And it just really showed like character building for me, like what a leader is and, you know, not trying to run ahead and
working as a team.
Be the hero, you know?
Yeah.
Just push through it together. So
what a weapon for keep going too. He could have easily said,
He's a mentally tough guy.
Yeah.
Definitely. And he didn't want to give up. So it was good. And then we got to the 23-kilometer stage. We did that. Super stoked. He was absolutely shattered. And this is actually a little funny story. There was no water at the Red Bull station or the halfway mark. So I was just like, oh, grab him a Red Bull. And as I'm going to grab a Red Bull, the film crew come over and want to give me a little interview, asking me how the run went. And I was just like, all right, let's do a little interview. I'm doing this little interview, just asking me how the event's going, like how the run went, how the raft went and all that. And mid-interview, I hear from Nick yelling out to me because he's on the ground, like trying to stretch out his calf that's screwed up. Go grab me a Red Bull and let's get out of here. Like, what are you doing? Like, trying to, you know, do an interview. And I was just, you know, young, caught up in the moment, I guess.
Bright lights and cameras.
Yeah, that's it.
You're not the first one, mate. Don't worry about that.
And then I'm going down to give him the Red Bull and then go grab our bikes. And we're about 100 meters down the hill. And I touched my head and I realized I've left my helmet in the bag. And I had to run back up, grab the helmet.
Oh, no.
And Nick's yelling at me like,
I can imagine.
Yeah, doing. And then the camera crew's got it all on film and I'm just shaking my head at the camera, just looking down. Just, I hope no one sees this, but everyone was seeing this. And then everyone's just looking at me like, what are you doing back up here? And I was like, got my helmet. And yeah, and then we did the 53 kilometer bike, which was very interesting. It was my second time mountain biking.
So, was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have taught you a new one.
Yeah. So yeah. My first time was actually on the Wednesday. So,
oh, that week?
Yeah, of that week. So...
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. And then we finished the 53-kilometer bike. Luckily, no broken bones or anything like that. The first day was done in 10 hours and I think it was 15 minutes. And that was day one done. And then we had an ice bath, went to bed, woke up at 5 o'clock the next morning. And we did a 22-kilometer mountain bike, which was basically a sprint. And we did good in that. It took us about an hour. We probably placed around 10th or 11th.
Okay.
Yeah, we're, you know, going all right. Going out in the kayak. And we're going from Mission Beach to Dunk Island. I'm not sure if you've been to Dunk Island before.
The crew told me what they were doing. Oh, there's a few little nasty bits in there for you, I got told. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And we're paddling out. We're about to hit the 4-kilometer mark and one of our rudders just keeps falling off on the right side. We're basically spinning around in circles and Nick would just be blowing up like, you know, F, 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 F. And I'd just be in the front like a little guy just trying, you know, do my thing like paddle, 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 paddle. And every single minute just stop. And it was literally the most frustrating thing in the world. And essentially we had to call the boat to come grab us. And because we were in the middle of the ocean and we couldn't go anywhere. We're going to miss the cutoff.
Yep.
And it would have been day over. So we basically made the call that we've got to, you know, cop a time penalty and go over and catch the boat to the next island where we ran 10 kilometers. And then we were that far behind, that many boats had passed us. We were, I think, one of the last three or four out of the 43 teams. What we were doing was we finished the run and they managed to grab the winner's kayak and give it to us we'd done the 10 kilometer run around the island. So they had already finished and we still got like another hour and a half to go. And we used their kayak to paddle back to mainland. And then we did the...
You are comparing yourself to Courtney Atkinson though.
Yeah.
He's a weapon.
Yeah, Courtney Atkinson is an absolute animal.
Great bloke too.
Yeah, good bloke. Never met him, but yeah, good bloke. Yeah. We were doing the 7-kilometer run on the beach and Nick was carrying me for the first 4 kilometers because I was almost at the stage of crying. I was literally in that much pain. He was just pushing me to my absolute limits. And I think that's one thing that this team event did really well. It basically, when you felt like giving up, you had that teammate there that was going to like grab you and pull you along. And so...
Because you have to finish as a team, don't you?
Yeah, we finish as a team. So Nick and I started getting a bit delirious and dehydration started to kick in. And we saw this Australia flag. And we thought that was like a Red Bull flag. And we thought that was going to be the end. But we realized that was the 4K mark of the 7K run of the after 143 kilometers of this absolute torturous race. So we got there and Nick just shut down. He essentially was just thought he'd done it. And you know when you think you've done something and you got so much more to go, you sort of just get real negative. So
mate, how did a 19-year-old handle, like he's an alpha obviously because the story you tell her how it's been on the whole way and fuck this and fuck that and da da da. Like what did you do?
What did I do to...
He shut down. What could you give him at that stage?
So basically I said, I'm going to take charge of this now. So I essentially looked after him for the last 3 kilometers. So I would pull him along. He'd be... My jog would be like his fast walk. So I'd just jog and push him up a bit and said like, look, mate, we've got this, you know. We've only got 3 kilometers left. I'd just constantly trying to be feeding him positivity as in, mate, let's just reflect a little bit. We've just done 140 kilometers together. This is our first time meeting each other. Let's just take a moment to really grasp this in, look up instead of looking down.
Yeah, nice. And that's good advice, isn't it? Look up.
Yeah, look up.
I'm a big fan of that.
Enjoy, you know, the moment. Take the scenes in. We're in one of the most beautiful parts of Australia, if not the world. Look at it, you know, there's beautiful palm trees. There's a Great Barrier Reef to the right of us, you know, and we've just done the first Red Bull Defiance in Australia.
Yeah, nice.
Know? So we're just basically trying to take every positive and then we'd just be pushing each other and then eventually we saw the finish line and ran across that bad boy and couldn't be happier.
Yeah, nice. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Look, I won't keep you much longer, mate. I just want to finish this little chat with something you've told me is I just want to do something meaningful. Okay, well, let's give it to the people. What is that thing that's meaningful?
Well, meaningful for me is like having an effect on other people, a positive effect on other people. So my like mission, a good book to read is actually Think and Grow Rich. And it asks you this question, like, what is your underlining mission in the world? And my like what I wrote down was to a positive effect on more people than I can ever meet, whatever that may, you know, encounter. So I sort of see myself being a speaker one day, and not like Tony Robbins, but just having a positive effect on more people than I can ever face-to-face meet. So yeah, whatever that may entail.
Yeah, nice. That's some strong words from a young man who's definitely changing the world. Thanks for coming on, mate. I'm really stoked you could make it on. It's been fun.
Mate,
keep it up. Don't stop.
Mate,
don't anyone tell you can't do it either.
Yeah, mate, it's been awesome. That went really quick.
And anyone out there that can line Dylan up with some assets to help him get to where he needs to help anyone, you know, just reach out, DM him. He doesn't really have any way else to contact him. That's a new way. Or you can email him on that thing that had like 50 numbers and shit on it, but I can't remember what that is. So just to finish off, dylan.nicholson.journey. Check it out. There's lots of TikTok shots on there for you people that want to see that. But mate, well done. You've run a marathon. You've done some cool things and you're definitely going to give to the world, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, thank you.
Rock on. Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.